You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a Monday morning show. The divisional week is upon us. Wild card weekend in the rear view mirror. My name's Sam Ekstrom, Vikings beat writer, zonecoverage.com. The co-host, Sage Rosenfels, former Vikings quarterback in the league for over a decade. He knows his stuff. We are your tandem on this program that now has 347 episodes. Sage, last year, if I recall, we sat here the Monday after wildcard weekend and we talked about how boring, how dreadful, how non-competitive the wildcard weekend was, and it reversed yesterday with four pretty good games, or I should say over the weekend, two great ones on Saturday, two exciting ones yesterday, and a couple upsets. We had some drama in the fourth quarter. We had officiating snafus. It was everything that you could hope for.
Yeah, it was playoffs in full force, and on Saturday, two road teams winning, and on Sunday, two home teams winning, and even some games were high scoring. Obviously, the Saints game yesterday, fairly high scoring game, and the game right before that, Jacksonville and Buffalo, extremely low scoring game, was just sort of like the Jacksonville Buffalo game reminded me of if Holyfield and Foreman were in a boxing match, but that boxing match actually happened today. And I don't know what's Foreman, George Foreman, 60 years old or something, and Holyfield's probably in his 50s. So it was sort of a slow slug 'em out, ugly just sort of game. But it was sort of thrilling because it was close the whole time, and it comes down to the wire. Every play seems important. Every first down seems huge. Then you go to last night's game, and it is just sort of this wild shootout right down to the very end, literally the last play of that game, and two really good quarterbacks, obviously. So that therein lies the difference. That's why teams want quarterbacks, so much as that. But that Buffalo game with Jacksonville, two not very good quarterbacks, and then the next game after that, two sort of Hall of Fame type guys, makes for a much more exciting game. So definitely a fun weekend of football. And at the end of the day, the Vikings will get a rematch with the Saints to try to exorcise some demons from going back in 2009. And if they win, if they beat the Saints, they have a decent shot to beat the Falcons to exorcise those demons from the late 90s. So we shall see how the next few weeks goes for the Minnesota Vikings. Hopefully at least a few weeks left in their season.
Yeah, the revenge tour is underway for sure. Let's dig in a little bit to some of those other playoff games. On Saturday, the Chiefs blow an 18-point lead. That's the second time in, I believe, 5 years that Andy Reid has lost an 18 or more point lead in a playoff game. He lost on the road to the Colts a few years back, and then against the Titans, a team that they should have beaten handily and were beating handily, 21-3 at halftime, and the Titans rattle off 19 straight, including a Mariota touchdown pass to himself to kind of kickstart that rally. Where do the Chiefs go from here, Sage, with Andy Reid? I mean, I think people have kind of been on him about game management and maybe some poor coaching in the past, which is odd because he's such a highly esteemed coach. But in big spots, he's often not come through. Do they go to Mahomes next year? Does Reid stick around? What do you think the ramifications are for Kansas City?
I cannot imagine them firing. I mean, you just don't fire coaches who, get you in the playoffs every single year who aren't jerks. I mean, there's sometimes coaches are successful and they're just such a cancer sort of around the organization that people just don't want that guy around. Andy Reid's not that guy. Everyone loves Andy Reid. He does seem to make some key mistakes at key times. And after, a solid 10-6 season, which actually saw their offense be the strength of that football team, not their defense. In the past, it had been their defense. He and their offensive coordinator made some mistakes in that game on Saturday. You have a lead. Kareem Hunt's the leading rusher in the NFL. He gets 6 carries, I believe, in the first quarter and gets 5 carries the rest of the game. And now if you're losing and he gets 5 carries the rest of the game, because you're down by 17 points at halftime, that's a different story. But they were winning by 17 or so points, and their running back should have been getting carries on first and second down, and to, you know, to slow down that game, to make that game shorter. And he didn't. And, you know, Kareem Hunt's one of the best players in the roster. He touched the ball five times in the last three quarters of that football game. So it's hard to call that a coaching blunder. You got to think that if you're the head coach and it's halftime and you saw, you know, six carries first quarter and one in the second quarter, you say something to your offensive coordinator, hey, let's run the ball in the second half. Let's make sure we get Kareem Hunt the ball. And I don't know if Andy Reid didn't do that or he didn't recognize that, whatever it might be. The whole offensive coach, the whole team, shoot, the defensive coaches should have recognized, hey, offense, run the football. Slow this game down. Let's hurry this game up and get it over with. Let's shorten this football game. But it seemed like nobody on the Chiefs coaching staff made that decision.
Yeah, that is pretty baffling. Derrick Henry, on the other hand, goes off for a career-high 23 carries, 156 yards, and a touchdown. Big win for Tennessee, and they probably saved Mike Mularkey's job with that win. They will take on the New England Patriots, which will obviously be a tough one, but I think for Tennessee, that fan base has got to be pleased with the big comeback win, one of their best postseason playoff wins ever. The night game on Saturday, Falcons at Rams. We both picked the Rams, but I really was not surprised by the outcome. I felt like they were vulnerable as a 3 seed against a team with probably a better, more established quarterback, a team with unfinished business, a team with a playoff track record. And the Falcons, I don't believe, ever trailed in that game. No, they didn't. And it was a one-possession game late. The Rams pulled within 6, and what do? They drive right down the field. They score the touchdown. They clinched it on a fade to Jones in the corner of the end zone. Impressive performance on the road for the Falcons. And I think they're going to be a tough out. Obviously, they get the Eagles next.
Yeah, the Falcons are one of those teams that really had to grind hard late in the season to get in the playoffs. You know, unlike the Vikings, who, not that they didn't really coast down the stretch, but those last few games were not just crucial for them to get in. They knew they were in. The question is, you know, what's their seeding? You know, if they had a player who maybe had an injury, they could sit them out if they needed to. The Atlanta Falcons did not have that. They needed every last win to get in the playoffs. And they snuck in, but they got all that experience from not just last year, from the last, you know, 4 or 5 years or longer. You know, Matt Ryan's been in the playoffs almost every year he's been the quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. They've got a ton of experience on that. And so they were not scared going to that game. On the other hand, the LA Rams had almost no experience. You know, other maybe Andrew Whitworth, who went a few times as a Cincinnati Bengal. They did not have much experience of being in the playoffs, and so not a surprise at all. I think in the NFC, we sort of talked about it, the NFC was so wild. Seeds 1 through 6, anybody could beat anybody on any given day, and so not a surprise at all. The Atlanta Falcons pulled that one out, and I think actually they're the scarier opponent. I think they're probably one of the best teams in the NFC playoffs, and one of the scariest things, because they have superstars in offense. They've got a great quarterback, and their defense is actually better this year because their offense isn't as explosive.
So the Falcons will play the Eagles on Saturday afternoon. The Vikings will play the Saints on Sunday late afternoon, 3:40 kickoff at US Bank Stadium. The Saints win 31-26 over the Carolina Panthers. They led that game 14-3 early. Then it was 31-19 late, but the Panthers wouldn't go away. They were a plucky bunch, and they came up just shy with a controversial ending in some ways with, number one, an interception late that could have easily been deemed incomplete. If it had been, it would have been a turnover on downs, and the Panthers would have had it 20 yards further downfield. But I want to ask you about Sean Payton's decision to go for it, 4th and 2, 2 minutes left, instead of forcing the Panthers to go the length of the field with no timeouts. I tweeted out that in no circumstance would Mike Zimmer have ever opted for that path. I mean, he would have trusted the defense, obviously, you know, given them 90 yards of field, no timeouts for the opposition. He's taken that 10 times out of 10. I was shocked that Sean Payton tried to win that thing on offense.
Yeah, I was shocked with that too. And you know, Bill Belichick's a very aggressive coach in those type of situations. He's the guy that in the past has occasionally gone for it. Let's just end the game right here. But I don't even think Belichick tries to end the game in that situation. You're playing at home. You're gonna back the other team up to probably at the 10, if not inside the 10-yard line with a good punt. They're gonna have to go 90 plus yards to get a touchdown, all right? And they're gonna have no timeouts. And the Saints defense is pretty good this year. They've got a good defense. They've got good corners. Lattimore is one of the best young corners in the league. They've got a good pass rusher in Jordan. They're a sound defense. They've been playing really fairly well, you know, throughout the entire game. You got to trust that your defense can keep a team out of the end zone that's going to have to go 90-plus yards with no timeouts. But he went for it, and he got lucky because Breeze, they called a bunch of slants, and slants are really good versus certain coverages. The worst coverage that they go against is cover three, and that's actually what they got yesterday. They got sort of a man, but it sort of turned into a cover three as a player fell off, ran into the throwing lane for the outside slant for Breeze, and nothing was there. And at that point, they were pretty much screwed. And again, as you said, very, very lucky that the ball was intercepted. That gave them about 20 more yards. Otherwise, the Panthers had the ball at the 50-yard line, not the 30-yard line, and only need 50 yards to go. And shoot, they got the ball down to about the 20 and in scoring position. So they could have been even closer if that ball was not intercepted.
Yeah, they got one heave into the end zone, which I thought Funchess could have made a better play on. And then Newton got sacked on the last-ditch effort. Saints win at home 31-26. Again, Breeze, 376, two touchdowns, one interception. I did take this away from the game, though. Out of the bye week, the Saints really unleashed Kamara back in week five when they got rid of Peterson, and they rattled off eight consecutive games with 100-plus rushing yards as a team. However, now four of the last five games, they have been under 100 rushing yards as a team, including yesterday, just 1.9 per carry. And I feel like that is arguably, you know, one of the greatest strengths of this team is the versatility of Ingram and Kamara, and maybe teams are starting to figure out how to stop that rushing attack. But again, Sage, the fallback, well, you just put it in the hands of Drew Brees, and he'll become your primary offense. You know, it's not bad to have a Hall of Fame quarterback and a strong rushing game, because you can pretty much pick your poison, you know?
Yeah, you know, this year the Saints have been winning in a sort of a different model than they have in the past. It's been, seems like, all Drew Brees for about the last 12 years in New Orleans. And, you know, he's going to throw for 350, 400, 450, 3, 4, 5 touchdowns. And we're going to try to outscore our opponents every week in these shootouts. This year it's been different. They've got this running game, which has been very good all year, two running backs into the Pro Bowl. And then they've got a legitimate defense ranked in the top half in the league. That's something that Brees has not had in the past. Seems like Carolina yesterday, their game plan is, let's shut down those two Pro Bowl running backs. Let's make Drew Brees beat us. And sure enough, Drew Brees did, with throwing for over 370 yards in the passing game.
When I look at New Orleans' schedule, when tested, they haven't necessarily won those big games. They were great against Carolina all year. They beat them three times, but they lost to Minnesota. They lost to New England. They lost to the Los Angeles Rams. They lost to the Atlanta Falcons. Most of their wins coming against subpar competition. Let's go back to that week one game against Minnesota. Obviously, things are different now. They had Adrian Peterson. The Vikings had Dalvin Cook. The Vikings had Sam Bradford. The Saints' defense was still very inexperienced. How do you think it's changed since that week one game where Minnesota really wiped the floor with them?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that was 4 months ago, right? So the NFL just changes so much, and no one really knows who exactly they're going to be in week one, and you know, how the season's going to play out, and, you know, what's the strengths and what's the weaknesses. And as you said, Adrian Peterson, they're trying to get him involved in Jacksonville, and they didn't even know who, if this Kamara kid was going to be any good. So Marcus Lattimore was a rookie. You know, the Saints had probably the best draft of anyone in the NFL this last offseason. They had an absolutely phenomenal draft. Almost all their players are starting the majority of the season. So you don't know any of that stuff in week one. So I think this is a brand new football game. You really can't take much from, you know, the first game of the year till now. And you know, one of those things about that first game is that the Saints defensively, they just had some just major breakdowns. It wasn't just lack of talent. It was like major just schematic breakdowns in their secondary, which caused Sam Bradford to get some just absolutely wide open wide receivers.
Sam Bradford threw for 346 yards in that game, three touchdowns, no picks. Dalvin Cook had 127 yards. Adam Thielen had 157 yards through the air, and Stephon Diggs had 93. So that was just a magnificent offensive game for Minnesota, maybe one of their best of the season. Do you buy into the concept of revenge? Let me put it on a personal level. Do you want the Vikings to avenge the 2009 loss? Does that something that resonates inside the heart of a former player who's had a tough loss like that?
I just want the Vikings to win. I don't know if I really care about revenging a loss or anything. I think it'd just be great for the Vikings to win, and I think it'd be great for the Vikings to win the championship game and get to the Super Bowl in the home game. That's what I'm rooting for. So I definitely will be tweeting out. Somebody on Twitter last night said I should be tweeting out my Sports Illustrated story a couple times this week to bring bring that thing sort of dust the cobwebs off it and bring that thing back to light and add a little more fuel to the conversation. But should be a great game, and obviously I'm hoping the Vikings win. But I don't think it has anything to do with or any sort of revenge. I'm not on that football team anymore, and most of the Saints guys aren't either. So they'll have bragging rights that they beat us in 2009 NFC Championship game for the rest of their lives, and that's just the way it is.
And I'm pretty sure that the only two players in the game that were around back then, unless I'm forgetting some veteran for the Saints, it's Drew Brees on one side and Brian Robinson on the other. Other than that, I'm pretty sure it's entirely turned over. So, like, if you're asking Jerick McKinnon about revenge, I mean, he was probably 15 when that game was played. So, obviously, there's not a lot of emotion within the respective locker rooms. This is more of a fan base thing. The fans want to feel catharsis over that devastating loss back in 2009, 2010. We got so much to talk about in this game, Sage, and we got to kind of slow play it because we got a full week of games or a full week of prep for this Vikings-Saints game. So why don't we just call it good there, and we'll reconvene on Wednesday and really dig into some of the matchups, dig into some of the personnel. We'll both get really prepared, develop some opinions, and then we'll hit it hard on Wednesday.
Yep, sounds great. Should be a great week.
Yep, can't wait. Mike Zimmer at 2, locker room at 12:30, and we'll get the first crack at what the Vikings think about Vikings Saints next Sunday. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Vikings. I'm on Twitter at Sam Ekstrom. He's on Twitter at Sage Rosenfels 18. You can hear the show on LockedOnVikings.com, a FanRag Sports affiliate.